Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey Griefsters, welcome to Series 6. Thank you so much for joining me, I really appreciate it. I hope you're all doing okay. Bit of a difficult time, isn't it? We've had since I last spoke to you last year, I think in December, things have changed. Thank you so much to all of you who sent just really lovely, wonderful comments. I did have my second baby just before lockdown, everything was fine. You know, apart from the global pandemic, it was basically fine. And I am very, very grateful to those of you who have been tweeting and Instagramming at the Griefcast and messaging me, because I know this has been a really hard time for so many of us, including all of the people who have just joined the club in this horrific time. So if you are very new, welcome. As I always say on the show, you are not alone. We have an incredible series coming up, loads of really exciting guests, those of, as ever, amazing stories. If you enjoy the show at all, please do rate and review and leave a nice review. I would really, really appreciate it. It really helps spread the word about the show in a time where I think we could do with talking a little bit more about death and grief. This week I'm joined by an amazing guest. I'm so excited that she's our first guest of Series 6. Her name is Candice Brathwaite. You may have heard of Candice already. She had a Sunday Times bestseller a few months ago called I Am Not Your Baby Mother. She's also known slightly, I think it's an unfair term in a way, but as an like Insta mummy, but she's more than that term gives her credit for. She's an incredible woman. If you do follow her on Instagram already, you know that she can cover such topics as hot dresses of the summer to talking to children about racism, and I was so, so grateful that she agreed to come and talk to me. Candice came on to talk to me about her dad, Richard, who died very suddenly when she was in her 20s. Candice, firstly, congratulations, because your book is, one, amazing, and two, is it still, it was 2 weeks in the bestseller list, right?
Three. Oh, and God. Like, I was, in the end, I was praying for a month, but I was also like, no one, least of all me, expected to, from an ego perspective, call yourself a Sunday Times bestseller anyway. So I'm like, 3 weeks, it's still selling. That's people amazing. Are still talking about it. It's like, it's a thrill. It's an absolute thrill.
But I think, I mean, it's testament to your writing and also testament to like, how needed this book was as well. When you do release something creative and people like start eating it up, you're like, oh, no one else had been talking about this. Like, it's really, desperately, desperately needed. But that is such an achievement, especially in lockdown, like books. You must have been like, oh my God, what is happening?
I was expecting like, not a flop, but I was just like, the world has bigger concerns. Mm. I was saying to my publishers, let's push it back. They were like, let's not. And then unfortunately, and I have to be honest about that, the murder of George Floyd and the amplification of the Black Lives Matter movement just meant that that book got tangled up in that conversation. And so I'm on a bit of a seesaw. I'm like, yeah, it's great. But I'm also like, it might not be doing this well if we didn't watch a black guy be murdered on our phones.
Yeah.
Let's just keep that real, you know?
I know.
And it's an odd place to be.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. It's like you said, that dual thing of obviously you're happy your book's done well, like that's brilliant, but then because it's like, I found that talking to some people, and you know, God, like I am very, very early on my anti-racist journey and have so much work to do, but sometimes you'd hear people being like, oh, it's so great, like this is happening, and then you'd be like, but is it great? Is it great that it's taking this? It isn't, is it? Like, because you're sort of, people are looking for like, oh no, they're looking for positivity, which I do understand because the world looks like it's on fire. So you're looking like, well, maybe it's good that we're all having these conversations. You think, it's not good. Like, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that it's 2020. I feel horrific that it's 2020 and we're like, oh, maybe black lives do matter. Like, you're like, oh,
yeah.
How is this? Yeah, which is, I mean, you know, like you said, it's a seesaw, I think, is a really good word, isn't it? Because it's like, it is a good thing. It is a good thing it's happening, but maybe that's not like... pat ourselves on the back, white people. Like, well done us, we're talking about it. Like, no, I don't think we get a cookie for it. Like, yeah, it's definitely not. Well, yeah, I mean, congratulations anyway. That is, for you, that is a good thing, but obviously, yeah, contained in this very strange place that we live in. So who are we remembering today?
We're remembering my dad, Richard Brown, who died when I was 20.
20, yeah, that's young.
Yeah, that's young. Yeah. I was 20 and he was 46.
Oh, that is young, yeah. My dad died when he was 44. And I think sometimes when you're younger, you think, oh, they were old. And then as you get older, don't you? You're like, no, they weren't. No, they but when you're in that, you're sort of, I was 15, so you think, they were old to me. Like, yeah. No, oh gosh. So, and what did he die of, Richard?
He died of the flu. He died of the common flu.
Oh my goodness.
I know. So this means that this pandemic is just so ultra triggering for me. He died of the common flu, which he just didn't go and get checked for, because we've all had the flu.
Yeah.
You take your tablets, you drink water, you stay in bed. Usually the end. Unfortunately for him, it turned into sepsis, and by the time he was meant to go to a football match, and he decided to stop in at Whipps Cross Hospital before the match and ended up dying in A&E just because. But and by that time, once they'd done all their tests, by the time he'd gone to the hospital, all his vital organs had shut down.
Oh.
He'd just left it far too late. How he even drove there is still beyond the doctors. They're like, how did he even get here in this state?
It's that thing sometimes when people are so ill but they don't know it. It's almost like the body carries on, doesn't it? Until someone says, by the way, you have cancer, or you're like, suddenly their body goes, oh right. But if they don't know, it's almost like that lack of awareness allows some force to keep them going. My goodness me. So so he died in hospital. How did you find out?
I was an au pair in Italy at the time, in Naples, and I think it was a Saturday, because the kids I was looking after had gone. Yeah, it was a Saturday, and I was on Facebook, because Facebook was huge then, and that's the way I connected with people, and I just sent my dad some photos of me going out the night before. So this is really strange. This is like 7 a.m. Italian time. And I sent him the pictures, and I've walked away from the computer for about half an hour, come back, and there's been no response. And I swear to you, I was like, I think my dad's dead, you know? Like, that was my initial reaction to, because he lived by his tech so much, he died with his BlackBerry in his hand. He died with it in him. So him not responding quickly was, I was like, And I'm by nature, I just think worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And obviously it was a flippant thought. I was like, God, I wonder if he's dead. Like, he never takes this long to respond. Mm. The morning ticks on, and then my inbox is just acting really weird. I'm getting these emails from people I believe I don't know. And the emails are like, call us urgently. We need to speak to you. And I'm reading the names on the emails and I'm like, who are these people? And then there's more emails coming. I'm like, oh, I know these names. These are my dad's work colleagues.
Oh my God.
I used to work with these people because I used to be a receptionist at his law firm. I was like, oh my God, it's so-and-so, it's so-and-so. Then I email dad again. I'm like, yo, dad, your work email's been hacked. Like, tell the IT team to sort their shit out. Yeah. This is very annoying. Still no response. And then there's an email from my godfather that comes in at the top. And like, slowly, slowly, the wheels are starting to go. And the first thing, I'm in such a fuzz now. I can't remember my dad's house number, so I call my nan, and I know my nan remembers everything. I'm like, nan, listen, I know I sound crazy, but I think dad's dead and I can't remember the house number and I just need your help. She's like, you are acting weird, calm down. And you know, she's being my nan and she's taking bloody long to like find her diary.
I'm just
gonna put you on hold a second, just being. And in that time I remember the number, so I hang up on her and I don't even say I'm hanging up. I call his house and the line is engaged. And then I know, then I know, because my dad never uses his house phone. And I was like, yeah, he's dead for real. He really is. And then the next email is like, no one wants to tell you this way, but we can't get hold of you. And even though I knew, even though like for hours I'd been, it started as a joke, but as time went on, I was like, no, actually, none of this is his persona. This is, why is he not responding? Why are these weird people emailing me? And just hearing it or seeing it, not even hearing it, I was like, oh.
So you were still in Italy at this point, as like you said, all the cogs start to go and you're like, oh, it's not just my anxiety or me being, you know, and what's the word, like worst case scenario, this is real. Oh my God. So I always think it must be so hard when you're sort of out of your familiar surroundings.
Yeah, and I was completely alone. Oh, my Italian host family weren't home. And I remember calling my dad's house phone back. His wife answered. Her and I don't have a great relationship. There was just this awkward moment of brokenness between us. Me saying, I'll call you back. Me then realizing I had no cash to get home because dad was meant to be booking my flight home for Christmas. No. And me being like, oh, I can't even get home. And in that moment, feeling really childlike and being like, literally, my parents just died and that was the person getting me home. Then me calling some of my Italian friends, them calling my host family ringing me in tears, them coming home a few hours later and just booking the flights, packing my bag.
That must have been like such a surreal experience, like packing your bag, like when you have to leave a holiday before you're meant to, not, you know, working holiday.
Yeah.
So your whole brain is like, this isn't right. I was supposed to be, you know, you should have left that family with like, oh, buy candies, have a lovely, we've had such a nice time. And it's like suddenly having, like you said, ripped up from you. That must have been so strange.
It was so horrible. And then booking my taxi for the next morning and it being so early, I can't even say goodbye to the kids because it's like 4:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and I'm outside of the apartment block and it's pitch black and there are all these stars in the sky and it's just me on the street waiting for this taxi. It's like something from a film. Mm. It's really hard to describe. And I remember wearing this coat my dad loved, this really old Zara coat that had he used to say I looked like the Scottish widow.
Widow.
Like it had this huge black hood. Yeah. And I remember the hood just engulfing me. And when the taxi came, me trying to explain what happened and the taxi guy telling me not to worry. And just fuzz.
Mm.
It's just so fuzzy.
Was it weird? I wonder because, so he lived in London, right? You're from London. I wonder, like, because Italy's such a different, like, it smells different and it feels different. Like, the air's always warm. It's so nice. Like, it must have been so strange to know, like I said, to be so in a complete environment that's not London, that doesn't have anything about it. And having to take that in, that somebody back there, like you said, standing under those stars, like, that wouldn't happen in London. Like, it's such a weird... But yeah, God, that must have been so hard. So you came back to London, and then was it just chaos or funerals?
What was it?
It's hard to remember, isn't it?
It was absolute destruction, because what then started to happen is that my dad was the only thread I had to his side of the family.
Oh, that's so hard, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's just awkwardness, it's fakeness. And then in the Black community, you have what's called a nine night.
Yes, I've heard of that.
I think a couple nights after I returned back to the UK, my godfather, who was my dad's best friend, comes to get me from my nan's house. And it's all really awkward because I haven't been to my dad's house physically in about 10 years. Mm. We worked together and I saw him. But like I said, because I didn't have a good relationship with his wife, I just thought, well, I'm old enough not to do that now. So So even going to his house was just, it was like being shoved underwater.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because
so much emotion there.
You go in and like his trainers are by the door and there's a shirt hanging up and there's pictures everywhere and there's a used coffee cup. And I felt like I couldn't breathe. Mm.
And that's not even an environment you're, because if you said when you go back to a house that you've visited a lot, you're like, oh yeah, well, I've seen that. I know that's where their shoes are. But because you hadn't seen it, that must have been even more like, oh, that's how he lived, right? Didn't know that's how the kitchen was or what he was doing. That's so personal, isn't it?
This is it. And I just felt really choked up. And I tried to stay the night. I was put to sleep in the spare room. And I knew the spare room really well because it used to be my room when I was a lot younger. But I know it feels like a weird term. I felt so haunted. Yeah. And this was before, I don't know, apps. This was before apps, because this was in like 2009. And I remember calling my friend at 3 a.m. and being like, I'm getting out of here right now. I need you to get on Teletext. I don't even know if people remember what Teletext was.
Love Teletext.
Okay. And I need you to work out what time the station opens. And I hurriedly packed my bag, put my coat on over my pyjamas. And I remember coming down the stairs, not wanting to wake anyone, but then remembering that as a kid, he would always like triple lock the door. And I'm really short and the top lock is really high. So then I had to run to the kitchen and grab a chair, slide the top lock off, move the chair out of the way, pull my bags, and I just legged it down the street, slammed the door and legged it all the way to Black Horse Road Station, which is on the Victoria Line, and sat on my trolley until they opened that station.
And what was that feel? Did you just feel like you just couldn't be in that space anymore? Was it just
too much? It felt foreign. It felt claustrophobic. I felt this was my first ever interaction with death.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt... I know it's my dad and I know I loved him, but I just felt all of this energy that kept me awake and left me unsettled. And by this time, if I'd slept straight for 2 hours, that was a lie. Yeah. And I just thought, I need to get out of here. And before I left, his BlackBerry was like on top of a passport photo of him was on top of his phone in the spare room. And I picked up his phone and I was the last dialed number on his phone.
Oh my God.
And even now thinking about that, I was just like, I'm still so angry. I'm really angry. And I know it sounds even horrible, but I really envy people whose parents get sick and you get this steady decline and you get this wrap up, like, you know what's coming. Your parent like just ripped from you so suddenly, I just think it's so unfair. And I know I sound like a kid saying that, but I'm just like, that's really unfair.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And we talk about that a lot on the show of like, there's no good really, because when someone, because the other thing is like my dad was sick, but he wouldn't talk about it. So we were in a situation where I could have had like this moment, this conversation, but he wouldn't. And I was too young to instigate it, so we didn't. Yeah. And then also you see them, you sort of see someone in pain, which is just, and then, you know, they go into this other place. But then when like you said, when it's a sudden, instant death that no one's prepared for, I think the shock is so big. Because I think what happens if you have a parent who's sick, only my experience, you're still very shocked, but I think maybe you're like 10% less, you know what I mean? Like, you're already slightly on that journey. You know they're going to die, even though you don't want to look at it. But you are, it's not when they do die, you're not like, what? You're like, yeah, okay. I didn't know that was coming, but also, what the fuck just happened? I think the shock, which must be wrapped up in kind of like post-traumatic stress as well. I don't know enough about it, but because when you just get a phone call or you have to put it together yourself, I think your brain, I think the human brain just can't process it, you know? It just, goes, no.
And I thought it was a lie for a really long time. So I was adamant about seeing his body, much to my regret.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, I really regret
that. That's interesting. Why do you regret it?
It haunted me for years. I think I only started sleeping properly without seeing his body before I slept. Maybe when my kid was born. So that was like 6 years ago. So it took a really long time for that not to be the last image of the day before I fell asleep.
Yeah, that's very, it's so interesting because there's a lot of research about like how it's quite good to see the body because it's something human that when you see them dead, something deep in your brain goes, okay, they are dead. And if you don't see the body, you can kind of, make this narrative that maybe they're not, even though you know, obviously you know they're dead. But I think that happens a lot. I think it's just traumatic when a parent dies because I had for years, I would only see him sick. Like I would try and imagine him not. And I like couldn't. I couldn't see anything but him being, he had pancreatic cancer, but it spread to his liver. So he went like completely yellow. So like all I could see was like this really sick yellow person. And then it took years before literally memories of a well person came into my head. And it's so hard, but I mean, I'm not, you know, I understand. I think when you see something so shocking, I guess also because the death was so shocking for you, perhaps that was the first time you really like connected his, when you saw his body, it kind of all, again, like all those pieces fit together and you're like, oh, he is dead. So of course that's like burned into your retina, isn't it?
Yeah. Like it was, and like the mortician did such a shit job.
Oh gosh.
I was like the cotton wool they used to like fluff his mouth out was like hanging out and the staples at the back of his head were all raggedy. And I was just like, and to be honest, that has, and I mean, this is, you know, I always say if God spares life, way down the line, I would love to like study being a mortician because seeing that really just made me realize how important that job is. And how, you know, if you're good at it, it shows. And if you're not, it really shows. Yeah. And I was like, I don't ever want anyone to see their loved one like that. It was just so rubbish. And I just thought, oh, that's awful. This is terrible.
I think especially any like end of life care job, like if you have a bad experience with a funeral director or a nurse or a doctor, like it, you're so vulnerable at that point. And it's a bit, I guess it's the same as birth, isn't it? Like if you have like a midwife who's a bit rude or is horrible or doesn't understand you or listen to you, it doesn't just hurt. It like rips you apart. You're like, you don't understand. I have nothing at the moment. I have no protection.
Yeah.
So when you do this to me, it's ripping me to my core at the moment. So I can imagine seeing him like that must have just, on top of all the shock and on top of being 20 and having to be like, what? Like this is grown up stuff, which I imagine, you know, you weren't in that place of, you know,
at all.
Responsibilities and stuff because you're 20 and you're just finding out who you are. But that is, did you, so you saw a mortician, then was there a big funeral or?
There was a big funeral, which was just, it was absolutely horrible. Again, the strained family dynamics cropped up. When I got to the house, I had come with my younger brother and my maternal grandparents, and my uncle, my dad's brother, refused to let my family in the house. God. He was like, oh, you can come in. And he even said that begrudgingly, but they have to stay on the doorstep and it's pissing down with rain. And then all the floral arrangements are arriving and brothers turned up, son has turned up, husband has turned up. No one's ordered a wreath that says dad. Mm. And I absolutely lose my shit. I am screaming at the top of my lungs. I am lunging at people. I am threatening them that they will have to put his body back on ice if they don't sort this shit out. Like, it was like something from EastEnders. I'm not going to lie to you.
But that's the thing about grief, it hits you in ways you don't always expect. And I think anger, yeah. I was very, very, very angry. And I think that kind of, like you said, that fury that can happen when you've lost someone is, it can surprise yourself, can't it? Like, it's just,
yeah.
because you've lost someone and it doesn't feel fair, so then anything that doesn't feel fair is like, no. Because I've had to deal with this.
Yeah.
I've had to lose my dad. So don't you fucking add anything else.
Because
I can't, you can't handle it. So that must have been so hard to have to deal with, like, a confrontation while you're trying to grieve your dad, you know?
And then I think the saving grace was my dad's work colleagues who perhaps knew myself and my dad's relationship better than his own family did, because they've watched us work together and they know how much we adore each other. They book me a cab to get to the church. They're being really comforting. I get to the church, I pick up the service sheet, my name's not on the fucking service sheet.
God.
I'm my dad's only child.
Wow.
So it's not like you can like, you know, replace me with someone or forget.
Or there's another child that is taking over or something that you're like, oh, okay, they're dominating, they're deciding everything. Wow, my God.
So then the pastor finds out, I don't know who tells him, that Richard has a kid. And he's on, like, the stage and he's like, oh, my God, this man has a daughter who's in the congregation today. And for some reason, she's been left off the service sheet. But I'm going to call her up here now because this is her dad.
Wow.
And then I stagger up there and I'm kind of silent for a few moments. And then I remember really eloquently letting rip.
Like, you are so eloquent, so I can imagine. Like, you are.
Like, I'm just like, I eloquently let rip. And I remember saying something to the effect of, like, you know, yeah, my dad's dead, but I promise you, you will see his spirit in me forevermore. Like, it was a threat. It was a threat. And I'm trying to work through it with my therapist now, because I'm having to admit that so much of the things I want to do or the places I want to be is absolutely to get back at people who in that moment tried to discard me so quickly that I'm like, actually, I kind of like the idea of being on your bus stop billboard every day. So,
yeah. Which, yeah, I understand. Like, you know, because again, it's like we're talking about that sort of seesaw effect of success sometimes, of like, it's brilliant and it's great. But also, like, there's maybe another side of like, yeah, fuck you. You're not laughing at me now, are you? And that's a very human condition, I think. Like, you know, we're flawed beings. It's never like, oh, this is wonderful. I've done this just for the good of the world. Like, that's not how we all work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. Well, how do you think that affected your grief? Because, you know, losing a dad is hard enough.
Mm.
You know, losing a dad very suddenly is very hard. Losing a dad without the support of, like, their network and their family and being, like you said, it sounds like there was obviously this communication breakdown and complications between everybody in the difficult dynamic, which, you know, after a death, nothing brings everything to the top of the pan faster than someone dying. You're like, oh, that's how we all feel about each other. Oh, okay. Yeah, but how did that affect, like, how you were grieving? Do you think it sort of...
I think I'm still learning what to do with my grief, because then it went on to... His ashes were scattered without me, so I don't know...
Oh, God.
Like, so there's no grave site, I've got no ashes, no urn, nothing like that. Candies. Like, they really took it to the hills.
Yeah, they committed to this, didn't they? They were like, we're not just going to halfway house this, we are going to do this as much as we can.
So, I'm still on that journey, because, you know, I've got, there's a graveyard near my house, and again, I just watch people go there with, I'm jealous. Yeah. And they're, like, tending to their loved one's grave, and I'm like... What does that feel like?
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, we talk about this a lot in the show as well, of like, if you can have these conversations before people die, it is so important, because however well a family gets on, there will be complications, because once that person isn't there to say, and especially like when it comes to ashes, graveyard, you know, all that kind of stuff, because I think sometimes we, what's the word I'm looking for? Like we sidestep it because it's uncomfortable. Like that stuff really matters. Like you not having a place to go to is hard. And but then, you know, that could have been that conversation that could have happened with your dad. But of course, when you're young, it's very difficult to think these things, isn't it? I think when you're older, you think, oh, yes, I should talk to my elderly parent. But when you're like 15 or 20, you're like, am I going to discuss them where they want to be buried? Like, no, I don't. How do I start that conversation? But yeah, that must be... Have you found a way of, like, making a place that you can go to? Because, I mean, you know, really, it's about you, not them.
I think he made a place. My Esme is born on the day he died. Oh. And I think I'm very believing in, like, there being, like, separate planes and him being there and me being here. And I think he works overtime on my behalf. I really do. I think he looks at the situation and he's like, right, I couldn't control that, but I'm going to have a hand in all of this. And so whenever I look at Esme or we celebrate her birthday, I'm like, okay, that's where that feeling is. That's where that energy is. And then my son is born on my birthday. And I called him Richard after my dad. And little Richard is just... the mirror image of big Richard. The attitude, the stubbornness, the laugh. I'm just like, you will never meet this guy, but you're just like twin flame. It's just so cute. And so I think so much of my grief is wrapped up in the love I have for my kids.
Yeah, and I think that's a very common thing that happens as well. I think it definitely happened to me that when you become a parent, a lot of new grief appears and a lot of understanding of them, because you were just a kid when they died, so you didn't know what, you know, you didn't understand the pressures of being a parent, and now you do, and you can understand perhaps why they reacted the way they did sometimes, or what they were going through. So I think it's a weird moment where you sort of start having a conversation with them again, isn't it? Because I think you can go through this sort of, like, you know, your 20s, like, oh, my dad's dead, okay, fine. And then when you become a parent, you're like, oh, you can almost hear what they're going to say, or you know what they would think about that. And I really understand, because my thing, the thing that really just drives me crazy is when I see granddads in the playground. I don't mind graveyards so much, I guess, because you know, we did spread his ashes, but when I see like a, you know, this grey-haired man pushing like a girl on the swing, or like you know, if my friends are like, oh, you know, my dad's being so annoying, he's picking up the kids, and I'm like, oh, like, you're so lucky. You're so lucky that you've gotten someone to be annoyed at. But as it with all things, it's hard to appreciate what you don't understand the worth of if you haven't lost it, isn't it? It's easy when you're on this side of the table to be be nice to your dad, like, just appreciate him, because, you know, everyone has different relationships. But I think that's amazing that he is, you know, lives on in both of them. I think that's really interesting, because Esme has his day, and then Richard is like him. That's kind of really, that's really special. That's really amazing.
Yeah, that it's just, it's amazing to watch him be around. And like you said, I just think of, and sometimes I laugh and I think, actually, I'm glad you're dead because the spoiling. I can just like, I know he'd buy Richard like those stupid mechanical BMWs like a kid could drive. And I'm just like.
I think that's, if you can hold, like I said this to someone once, like as someone who's lost a parent, I think what it makes you realise is all a parent can do is love you so much so much that when they die, you kind of still feel it. Like that's basically all they can do. You can't really protect them from so many other things. Yeah. But the fact that you can know what he would say, you know, you can have those conversations with him. And my therapist said this to me once because I felt like the conversation ended too early. That's what used to make me really angry. Like I was in the middle of something where, you know, where'd you go? And she said to me, the conversation is still going on. And I found that really like, oh, right, fuck. Like it is, isn't it? But not necessarily in a physical form. But that is, again, painful and wonderful at exactly the same time, that you can think, oh, he would have bought them this, but he can't buy it. Like it's so mixed, isn't it?
Yeah. It really is. It really, and Esme speaks of him like she knows him, which is really funny. She's like, "Yeah, Grandad Richard would have done," and I'm like, "Well, how do you know that?" And it's just
that's so sweet.
Like she's so confident in her understanding of him. Mm. So I'm just like, actually, oh, it's hard for me, but I appreciate what death has cracked open in me. And like you were saying, how honest it's made me about what I want, how openly, RJ's too young, but I'm fiercely honest with Esme. I'm like, you know, and I don't try to scare her, but, you know, when she's around her friends, she speaks so confidently about death.
Wow, that's amazing.
She's like, yeah, one day we're all going to be dead. And, you know, then the room goes silent.
I mean, that's my kind of kid, but yeah, I imagine some other mothers are like, what did she say? Oh, we deal with death very openly in this house, actually. But that's, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a bit, but it's so funny because my other half, Bode, Papa B, I call him, has not lost anyone like that.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
And so there is sometimes slight loggerheads. Yeah. Because he's just like, I know it's coming, but I don't want to know. I don't want to hear it. I don't. And then when you've got a 6-year-old who's like, Daddy, you're going to die.
It's like in his face. You can't get away from it. Well, good. I think good in a way. I feel like you need to have these conversations. And I think what a privilege that she is aware of it. You have had that conversation. And she might then have that, when she's older, might have that conversation with you and her dad about what do you want? Where do you want to be? And like, to have that early, as you know all too well, when it isn't there.
Yeah.
Because this is what I always think is like, yes, conversations are difficult. Yes, it's hard to see, talk to a child about that. Do you know how much harder it is for that child to deal with the consequences of not having it? So it's like you have to weigh it up with, you know, with all things parenting. It's like you said, you, age 20, having nobody in your corner because those conversations haven't been had. Like it's amazing that Esme can do that. It is hard. My husband, when we first met, he hadn't lost anyone. And I used to be like, oh, you know, you don't get it. And then very sadly, he lost his dad, then his mum. So he actually the joke is like, Jesus. Oh, now you win the grief competition. Like, I used to be like, you don't understand. He's like, no, you don't understand. And I think it is hard, as we say on the show, for people not in the club. Because I think what they don't understand, when you lose a parent, you know, especially if you lose both, like you just lose a bit of safety. And I think people who still have both parents, there's like just this, I don't know, like 5% more confidence about the world in them sometimes, of like the people who made them are still here. I can't work out why, like what, you know, I can't have a scientific theory for why you feel like that, but it is like there's something stronger sometimes. Mm. Or maybe it's just like you said, like not thinking the worst sometimes of like, you know, they have a belief it might be all right.
And I don't have good, very good relationships with anyone else. So like, it was like, well, no, the only remaining guy is my granddad, who every time we speak, we end our conversation with, "Don't you go anywhere now." And he's like, "I'm not going anywhere, kid." My granddad, my maternal granddad, and my dad are the two men who definitely made me the woman I am. And it was my granddad who took me to see dad in the Chapel of Rest.
Wow.
And the way granddad was just so loving on that body. And I'm like in the corner, like, "I don't want to see that. Don't you dare." And I swear to God, if granddad could have got in the coffin and laid next to him, he would have. And like, he was stroking my dad's head saying, "Don't worry, I'm going to see this one through. You know, I'm not going to go anywhere until I think, yeah, for sure, she's set." And so I have that one person still. But I say to my therapist all the time, I said, I do have these feelings of being an orphan or an outcast or just completely an island. Yeah. And as much as it hurts and it makes me sad, I think that feeling definitely contributes to how in my work life, in my day-to-day life, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I don't care, because I'm like, actually, there is no pain you can bring to my door that will exceed this.
Yeah.
There is no embarrassment. There is no shame. There is nothing that will supersede that moment. So bring it. And I think once you're in that position, like, good things can happen.
Yeah.
Because I live my life with a sense of, all right, you know, touch wood, it doesn't happen to your kids or anyone you love for a really long time, but you know how this ends, girl. So what are you going to do with the time in between?
Wow. Yeah, I think that's amazing way to put it. Amazing. It's really hard with grief because I think it can go either way. It could not really kick you down the stairs and destroy you, or it can, as it has with you. And I think I feel the same. Like, it gave me this, for a better word, kick up the arse of like, okay,
yes,
time is short, you just got to get on with it. I think I've lost it a little bit, but the 5 years after he died, I was untouchable. There was nothing you could have said to me, nothing. And I think back now to the confidence. What I didn't realize was confidence. I was just so devastated, I didn't give a crap. But the way I used to speak to men or friends who annoyed me, I was just like, I just don't want to do that. Like, you've just upset me. Okay. And I remember people's faces being like, "Oh, okay, she's very honest." And me thinking, well, you know, like, I don't know. Oh, that's just how I feel. And now I'm much, I feel like it's, I've lost it slightly, that like not caring, because it just sort of creeps back in, you know, normal life creeps back in. But that feeling of just, like you said, I've just been through this thing that's so painful and so difficult. Whatever you're moaning about really is so small, really. Even though it might annoy me and it might affect me, it's not the death of someone. And I used to really feel like that. I remember breaking up with someone like when I was a teenager and they were really upset. And I was like, "I'm not dead. Like, why are you upset?" And I just couldn't understand. So I was like, "I'm here. You could still technically see me." Because to me, I was like, if people aren't dead, basically it's fine. And I mean, that is quite a harsh view. But I think it must be very difficult for you, said, because, like, do you have any contact with any of his family at all now?
None. Weirdly enough, the daughter of my godfather reached out to me a couple. I think one thing a Sunday Times bestseller will do is bring a lot of people out of the woodworks. And
oh, too many. Oh, hello, you again. Right, okay. Hello. Okay.
I'm getting a lot of messages. And she DM'd me. And I was hot with fury. Mm. I was hot. And I had to remember, I was like, right, the heat is not for you, because you're slightly younger than me. And we used to play together as kids. And when dad died, you were a kid too. This is not your fight. In my response to her, though, I did say, like, "Oh, thanks for reaching out. You know, I want a few words with your dad. Here's my email." I've not heard a single pipsqueak. Yeah. And because I've not heard a pipsqueak in 10 years, that hasn't changed how I feel.
Yeah.
But his silence, I'm like, I'm also, because now I'm an adult, I'm like, that it's kind of awkward. Like, how would you start this email to me? What what is the, you know, and it was my, it was Bode who was like, because I was going to ignore her message, and Bode was like, no, he was like, you want to do so much with your life. He's like, the way that that situation has not been closed off for you affects you so deeply that if that opportunity is there, he was like, I will shove you in it. So you respond to her. But now the ball's in his court, in their court. And should the ball not come back, again, like I said, nothing's changed for me, because I've been doing this for over a decade. And you start to live with the fact that you, like, there's so much I want. I want old football shirts. Where are my dad used to love his camcorder. Where's all our home videos? Where are those? All I have physically of my dad's is the stuff that his workplace allowed me to clear off the desk.
Wow, is that it?
That's it. So, like, I was just, again, like this orphan just leaving with a box.
I think it's really, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because when you are an adult, you do start to see, like, oh, it's hard. Like, it is. I think when I was so, so angry with everybody when I was 15, because you're like, you're supposed to be the adults. Like, you're supposed to sort this stuff out. It's not my job. And then as I've got older, I've been like, okay, I do see that people have lives and they have their own issues. And it's, you know, sometimes they're looking at something and they didn't know what to do. So they, in my head, was like, you did the wrong thing. And then as I've got older, I thought, maybe you just didn't know. You didn't know what to do. You hadn't been raised with enough emotional vocabulary to even reach to me. but also the problem with that, you know, you can be empathetic, is like you said, you know, he's right, Papa B, I love Papa B, is that it it affects you. It damages you having that pain.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I'm sure for that girl, like, it's hard, because if she was, you know, as much as a child as you were, like you said, and I think sometimes if the adults don't set the tone, it's very hard for children to do something different. You kind of take your lead, don't you? So if, like, everyone's like, oh, well, we're not talking about it, and we just don't see candies anymore, that's the end of it, then as a child you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's what, you know, it's, you don't realize till you're older that you're like, why did we stop seeing that person? Like, maybe they needed us. Like, it's
exactly,
it's really difficult.
And I went on her page, and like, she's got married, and my godfather was, of course, in the photos. And it, again, it just made me, I was just like, I know it's it feels like a weird term, but I was like, excuse my French, I was like, you fucking thief.
Yeah.
You thief. Like, I think there is so much you guys have of him that won't replace, like, him walking me down the aisle. But you don't get to hold all of that, all those memories, all those boxes of physical or spiritual stuff. Why are you hoarding it when the only person on this earth who can say they are connected to him by way of, like, DNA is shut out from that? I don't get it.
It's really hard, isn't it? It's really hard. I think also what I've learned through my journey is sometimes people don't realize, like, how much you need that stuff. Like, I've had people be surprised, and you're like, are you kidding me? Like, I is it a photo? Is it a memory? Like, is it something he said? Like, and I'm so, like, I feel like I'm so hungry for it. Like, please, please, please. And they're like, oh, you want this? You're like, yes. Like, I do want that. And I think sometimes, because their relationship with that person was so different, it's tricky for them to understand child to father. Because, no, like you said, you're the only child. So you don't have, like, a sibling to be like, oh, yeah, like, I get it. And I think that's, sometimes people are seeing them as a friend or a brother or an uncle, you know, they're seeing it that way. And they don't realise that when you're a child, you just want anything of theirs. There's actually, like, I've read grief theories about it. It's called transitional objects. So, like, anything that, you know, they have a connection with that allows you to remember them but keep them with you. Like, it's actually a very important part of the, you know, not you never get over it, but a very important part of the process. And I totally know that feeling when you're like, you have it, give it to me. Like, and you can't be like, just give it to me, fucking give it to me. You have to be like, have you got anything that it's like, you're so, you just want it so badly, don't you? It's just it's really,
and I just, it's just it's a lot. And, you know, that's the reason, it's my reason for having two kids. And, it, you know, it's my only reason. And people are like, really? I'm like, listen, I I know what it feels like to be an only kid in that scenario. Mm. And I need, for when my time comes, hopefully when I'm grey and done with this shit anyway, that those two have each other. Mm.
Yeah.
That they are bonded in their grief for mum. Mm. I could not imagine just leaving Esme to that. No. Like, no.
I do understand that. I do. And I interviewed Emily Dean, who very sadly lost her sister and her mum and dad, but she was saying when her sister died, the thing that was so hard was she lost her witness. And I was like,
that's such a powerful statement.
I know. And it was like her parents were quite chaotic and very avant-garde 60s people. So she said they had this mad childhood, and the person who she could always look at and be like, do you remember when they got us out of bed at midnight to do a show to like Doctor Who, like, had gone. So she said she kind of felt like, God, did that happen? Because I think you really do, obviously, only children, if you're listening, you're fine. I'm sure you're fine. Like, it's a personal experience and choice with children and stuff like that. But it does sometimes can be a very wonderful experience to have someone who understands that dynamic. And I think also, I don't know if you have this, like, when I lost my dad, I really wanted some people to step up, and they didn't. And I think now I've come to a place where I'm like, okay, I just don't think you could. You had your own grief and your own stuff. But for a long time, I was like, I was the girl without a dad. There was all, like you said, these male figures. Where were you? Like, did you know? And there was lots of, you probably had lots of promises. And then it doesn't sort of, I think people really want to help, but they don't realize that help is like, oh, you got to show up a lot and on a regular basis. You can't just like...
Yeah, you've got to like help me move. Yeah, yeah. You've got to like put up a shelf. Yeah. You have to like...
Just check in.
If you're gonna, you have to... And yeah, I can vibe with you on that. No one stepped up for me.
It's hard.
And so as young as they are, I'm like... And lockdown has been very helpful for this, where I'm like, that's your person. Mm. And I look at RJ and I'm like, to Esme, that's your person. Don't you ever... That is, if mummy and daddy aren't here, your person's here. Don't forget that.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's. I think you've obviously learned a lot of lessons through a lot of difficult... Done learning. Done. Still going at school. When does it end? I know. Like, it's hard, isn't it? And I think also every time you... As you get older, like you said, the conversation keeps going. So, you know, things happen. Yeah. I imagine for you, did you have it with the success of the book? Did you have a moment where it was like bittersweet because, your dad's not here to...
Completely, because I wrote it in the book. I was about 8 years old and it's a summer's day and we're cycling and he stops at the corner shop to get me a cornetto. Don't know how the conversation came up. He was like, oh, he always called me Canned. You know what, Canned? I always wanted to be a writer, but as a black boy in the 70s, it's not going to happen for me. So, you know, but don't worry about you. You can do anything. Now, here I am doing anything, and I'm just like, can you see this? I'm always like, can you see this?
Oh my God, that's amazing, Candice.
Like, yeah, I'm just like constantly gesticulating to the air, like, look at this, Dad, look at this, like, and just and what seemed like smaller things, like buying our first house.
It's huge.
I'm like,
look
at me. You know, and I just think, yes, he died young. Yes, I was young, but oh my God! Like in the short time we had together, so much of the work I create is rooted in all of his teachings, and I'm like, so I even when I'm in meetings with management or whoever, I sometimes accidentally say we, and they're like, who are you talking about? I'm like, oh, sorry, because in my head, it's him and I.
Wow.
I'm like, oh yeah, we're gonna write another book. They're like, who's she talking about? I'm like, oh, me. But I just, I feel like we're still on this journey together.
I think that's incredible. I think that's really, really just lovely. Because if you can love someone that much that they can carry that love with them for this long as you have been and help you do the things you do, like I said, as a parent, that's all you can do, that you were able to walk away from a really difficult situation but still not be not lose him, even though you've lost him and you've lost the physical possessions and you don't have the contact. I feel as well like yeah. I didn't quite get what I wanted maybe in this sphere, but I do know he loved me, and that is like
yeah.
when you're thinking, oh, I wish I had that photo, or I wish that person had stayed in touch. You're like, well, the big picture, what really matters is I do know he loved me, and that. I mean, that is...
And that's the thing, because some people have all the bells and whistles and yeah. photo albums and stuff, and they're still like,
Yeah, and the relationship still... Exactly. It can still be... You can have everything, every piece of them. You can have their house and still be like, oh, our relationship wasn't great. Well,
yeah.
Richard sounds like... What a man. He sounds bloody brilliant.
Yeah, I still talk about him in present tense sometimes, but no, he is very, very dope and very funny. Very funny. Sometimes I'm just I laugh till I cry, and Bode's like, are you and your dad joking again? I'm like, yeah.
Oh my god, that's so nice. If you can be that funny that from beyond the grave you're still cracking your daughter up, like, hats off to you, Richard. That is some skill that some comedians never have. Still making you laugh, that's amazing.
Candice, yeah.
thank you so yeah. much for talking to me. Like, I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, to Richard, what a man.
Thank you, this was amazing. Yeah, to Dad.
You can follow Candice on Instagram at Candice Brathwaite. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. Artwork was by Jade Perkin. And the show was recorded in my living room. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.